And welcome once again to another adventure in computer talk, sometimes political pundits, and whatever else we feel like delving into over the virtual airwaves. Sounds a bit exciting, doesn't it? Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Talk Radio, broadcasting through an internet-enabled piece of gadgetry near you at WGH1071.com. I'm going to be joined by two very interesting and distinguished and extremely erudite guests today, mates of the microphone, brothers in broadcasting, because goodness sakes, I'm not interesting enough to spend 45 minutes just talking and rambling on my own. One of my guests is familiar to these airwaves. He's been on with me many, many times, and will probably be on with me many, many more times. His name is Mr. Calvin Williams. Although a native of the southwestern Columbus suburban environs, he now hangs his hat in his own private Idaho, as the song says, with his current employment, his lovely new friend of the female variety, and even his the child of the lovely lady that he has been seeing. Maybe we'll discuss that a little bit, as this child has provided much joy to him. And if you follow him on Facebook, goodness sakes, some absolutely adorable little photos and poses. Again, Calvin Williams from Idaho. We have a new guest with us. His name is Brandon, and if I'm not mistaken, Brandon is from the other side of the country, where they're less known for potatoes and more known for lobsters. Thankfully, lobsters that you eat, not lobsters that you keep as a pet and let run around the house. Of course, Calvin does have a pet snake, so what am I to say? Anyway, from the land of lobsters, we introduce Brandon. So, Brandon, since you are the new kid on the block, tell us a bit about yourself and tell us a bit about what we're going to talk about today on a topic of technological talents and computer fabulousness.
My name is Brandon Parker. I'm 39 years old. I'm not a professional tech whiz, master of nothing, anything like that. I'm just more of a curious guy, nerd, who's been, I've been using AI to teach myself programming, build projects. Over the last year and a half, I've been, kind of rebuilding my life, got a bad past, and, computers and AI and all that have been a big part of that process. It's giving me some purpose, some structure, a way to keep learning and moving forward.
So you got a major milestone birthday coming up. Calvin recently had a birthday, if I'm not mistaken. 40, that's a big one, Brandon. I've already passed that mark myself. Long time ago, in fact. And, I don't get older, I get better. And that pretty much applies, I think, to all three of us and most members of the species Homo sapiens. Kind of interesting, Brandon. People from Maine, as you know, they usually have a pretty thick northern New England accent. Having lived in New England and the East Coast, I'm familiar with the accent. So I guess you're not from Maine, or did you just teach yourself not to have the accent anymore? Tell us more about that.
It's probably because I'm talking on the radio, talking to you right now. Why I don't have my I don't have as much of a Maine accent.
Okay.
I'm familiar with what a Maine accent sounds like, and I have one, and it's not as thick as a traditional Maine accent.
Being in the voice business, I do find that somewhat fascinating. But it's kind of like those British actors and actresses you see on TV. You wouldn't know they were British because they no longer have the accent. Then you have the people, interestingly, also a gentleman from New England, probably before your time, but Paul Benedict, who played Harry Bentley on The Jeffersons, he was British on the show, but he was from New England in real life. And he was on Sesame Street. He was a well-known actor, sorely missed. But he had a very, very believable but fake British accent. So you really don't quite know. So just kind of fascinated by that as someone who is an aficionado of local geography and quirks between different parts of the country, just noticing that you don't sound like you're from Maine. You sound more like you're from Grove City, like Calvin. Did find that fairly fascinating.
The reality is I'm trying. I don't like my voice personally, and I'm just changing it to make it not sound the way it is.
Oh well, I guess
that's probably the truth.
I guess you can do that. People change their gender. You can change your voice. Why not? Right? It is 2025 after all. So Calvin, we haven't talked in a bit. I did bring up about the young person that you've been helping to take care of. How is things going with you on a personal level?
Things have been going great with me on a personal level. Besides hanging out with Devin and Maggie, I've just been working constantly. I'm still two-jobbing it, so that also explains my hiatus in the radio show, because I'm either at work, somehow also at work, or I'm either driving to work or from work or getting ready to drive to work.
Well, that sounds fairly fun. Well, I'm glad you're doing well, and glad that things with Devin and the little one are going fantastically. Rumor has it Devin might be joining us on a show at some time in the future, so we will, with bated breath, wait for a distinguished female member of our panel just to spice things up a bit and just talk about life and all that other good and fancy stuff. Now, Brandon, you mentioned that you were using AI to teach yourself programming. Now, maybe I'm just an old-timer, maybe I'm just old, but we didn't have AI teaching people how to program when I went to school. We had teachers with blackboards and transparencies and, you know, a paddle if you don't behave yourself and tests and all that good stuff. So first, what programming languages are you learning with AI? And tell us exactly how AI functions. And I think you're old enough to remember, I mean, going to classroom with a blackboard, et cetera, because you're kind of between my age and Calvin's age. Tell us how, because this really intrigues me, Brandon, how does learning a programming language and learning about computers in general with AI compare to doing it with an old-fashioned teacher and a chalkboard?
It's a major blocker, you know, because a lot of people, they'll go to start coding, and you get into that tutorial loop, you know, the tutorial hell loop, and it's very frustrating, you know. And the thing is, you're right, we didn't have that. I started computers, you know, not, I was around like a teenager on Oregon Trail on a little Tandy computer, you know, when I was younger. So I remember before Google came out, you know. So, and to have this now, it's a very powerful tool. Now, I would encourage anybody that's listening, if you have any curiosity in it all, you know, start out VS Code, right, on a Windows computer, Linux, doesn't matter. If you're not familiar, then you're going to have a Windows, not Linux. You know, get yourself VS Code, you know, Copilot, you can get a free trial, and just start prompting it. And it, you just say, hey, I want to learn Python. And that's what everybody should start with, is Python, for sure, without a doubt. It's the most English-like language, you know, very versatile. You can do a lot with it. It's the number one choice for working with AI. But yeah, tell Copilot and just for anybody that doesn't understand, VS Code is an integrated development environment, right, where it's an IDE. It's just for writing code, right, syntax, highlighting, etc. And Copilot is an AI that's right in the, it's an assistant right in the editor, and it will actually go, you can go in agent mode, and it will set up a whole simulation, a whole learning process, debugging, everything, anything you want to know, anything that you get caught on, you can just ask it right there in the editor. It's a very, very powerful tool. It's literally how I've learned. I have no certification or nothing, but I have, like I said, I'm not a master of anything, but I have familiar with, you know, C, C++, Golang, Python, Rust, and JavaScript, HTML, you know, I do website development, stuff like that. All of that has been learned right there in that IDE. So VS Code, very powerful, highly recommend it.
Well, IDE, that used to be a kind of hard drive, wasn't it? You remember IDE drives, Calvin, and certainly you do, Brandon. So it looks like the term IDE has changed meaning, hasn't it?
Yes, yeah, just basically a really fancy notepad.
So going back on a long enough timeline, when I was in high school, which actually, Brandon, I think you and I have known each other since I was in high school, back when I still lived in Ohio. Brandon and I actually met online when I still lived in Ohio, over the topic of CB radio, which there's nothing that he can't do with CB radios either. He knows everything about repair and modification. He's actually fixed quite a few radios of mine that I've sent out his way. He builds amplifiers from scratch, so it kind of took me by surprise when I learned that you were getting into doing all this coding and stuff, because I actually went to high school. I went to the Career Academy for cybersecurity, and I briefly learned programming in Python with a program called Notepad++, which I ended up not pursuing a career in that because I just can't sit at a desk all day. I would lose my mind. But I remember being pretty good at Python programming and doing a little bit of JavaScript, but I've just been out of it for so long, I'm not even sure if it would come back to me at this point.
Well, I figured you would like Python, Calvin, because, as I mentioned, you have a pet snake. I'm not sure if the snake's a Python or a corn snake or boa constrictor or a... or something. I don't think your snake is venomous. She's much too mellow to be venomous. But I figured Python would be a good fit for you. And as Brandon mentioned, it's considered to be a good learning language, but it's still powerful, just like Visual Basic. It's not as arcane as some of these weird languages, but it's very powerful. Just because it's called Basic doesn't mean that it can't do some pretty advanced things. That's often the way things are with computers. Don't think that just because something sounds simple and is easy to learn with, you know, some brains and some sweat and elbow grease doesn't mean that you can't do all kinds of fancy stuff with it. So how did you decide to use the AI, Brandon, in this vehicle, as a vehicle for learning how to program? And do you think it really is the wave of the future? Can we fire all the computer science teachers and do it with AI and Copilot? What are some of your thoughts on that, maybe 10 or 20 years down the road?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. You know, it's a very powerful tool, no question, but it will never replace human creativity. You know, it's about removing the friction that used to stop people like me from getting started at all. You know what I mean? Because that's you know, half the battle right there. It doesn't make you a genius. It just makes learning less intimidating, and it will never replace humans. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I feel the same way, is that there are limits as to what a machine can do. You know, artificial intelligence is a buzzword. It's kind of like the cloud. The cloud is just the internet. It just sounds fancy, like it's being that data is being kept at some fancy server that you're paying money for. But if it were just called the internet or called, well, it's Microsoft server in some odd country, it wouldn't seem as fancy, wouldn't seem as secure, and probably wouldn't seem like it would cost as much. And so AI is just that next level, the next dimension of what a computer can do. But is it really much different than what computers were set out to do to begin with? One thing Calvin's done, and he and I have messed with this a bit, is you tell the AI interface about your life, your job, your friends, and it makes a little song for you. And the song honestly sounds better than a lot of what you might hear on the radio. In fact, the first time that I heard Calvin concoct a song with AI, I thought it was a real band. And I had to pinch myself to realize this is just AI. This is just a computer. And that's just the next dimension. Nothing that computers really couldn't do 50 years ago, but they couldn't do it as quickly and as well and as artfully as they can do it now. It's just another dimension. The voice recognition. I'm in some autograph collectors groups on Facebook, and they have these autograph authentication people, but AI can do some of that also. Handwriting analysis has obviously been around a long time, but now we have a case of someone gets an autograph, you know, maybe a very valuable one, a former president or a famous athlete, and was it AutoPen? You know, was it a really good stamp? Was it the person's assistant? Or did Johnny Bench actually sit down with a baseball in front of him and a ballpoint pen and sign that ball, which is worth, you know, possibly $100 from a Hall of Famer like that? And autographs can be authenticated. Also, another thing we do with AI is you can play a song. You don't know what the song is, and it'll tell you the artist, the album, etc. You can even just give a few words, and it'll go ahead and tell you what song that is from, and possibly make up some new lyrics or change something around. It just is quite a dimension, and to me, the creativity really does a lot. Something else, if you're decorating your home and you want to see what this flooring or this drapery or this desk would look like in your room, you pretty much click a couple buttons and it'll show you. Of course, nothing really beats the real thing. I mean, AI is still AI. It's still artificial. But nothing else, it is quite amazing. And you know, Calvin, as we've talked about, I've been quite impressed with these songs that you've been able to concoct using AI, and it often sounds better than what you might hear from a real band. It is fascinating, to say the least.
I did in fact use AI to create a couple different theme songs for our show, but going back to what you were saying a minute ago, I've always found music recognition apps kind of like Shazam or SoundHound to be quite fascinating in how they work. I actually asked my phone the other day what a song was, and it took less than half a second to figure it out, and I was just thinking, like, there's no way, but sure enough, it was correct. From a half second of sound, that's all it needed to pull it up.
Yeah, it is quite amazing what this AI can do, but we want to advise our listeners, especially the younger listeners, not to get carried away, that human beings can think, and more intelligent members of the animal species, I mean, dogs, apes, dolphins, they have some thinking ability, but nothing really can surpass the human brain. After all, it was humans that invented computers, that used computers, that programmed them, and that allow the AI to interface and produce the best, most effective, and sometimes profitable results for people. And we have stock trading. What can AI do about that? Can it get you rich on the stock market or some other kind of investment by determining what you should buy, when you should buy it, when to sell it, etc.? So understand the limitations of AI and that every day it evolves. But bottom line is, the human brain is something that I don't think we will ever surpass. And
remember that AI was actually created, it was modeled around the human brain with the neural network and all that stuff. Like, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to recreate like a digital brain. That's what basically, or a super brain really, but you know, it's important that people use it as a tool, you know, and don't be afraid of it, because that's what happens with all this, you know, jargon about, you know, AI is going to take over the world. No, it's not. We built it, right? We control it. It's important that we train kids and get them interested and teach them in ways that keeps them interested in things like AI and computer science in general, and we give them the tools to go on and create great things. All these tools that you're talking about, right? Those are all tools that are created with AI. Somebody else, some curious person, had a good idea to make an app that recognizes, you know, songs and stuff, and they pull in an API or they train a model themselves. Like, anybody can have an idea and get an OpenAI API key and build their own AI program. It's a powerful tool, and we should encourage our younger generations to get into that, like, as early as possible.
Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WGH Radio, WWGH1071.com, with my regular brother in broadcasting, Calvin Williams, joined by a new guest, fascinating gentleman, Brandon Parker, from the great state of Maine. And we are mainly talking about AI, computers, technology. Interestingly, as I brought up earlier, Brandon's age is somewhere between my age and Calvin's age. So we have different generations, but a lot of the same philosophies, which I think is fairly fascinating, to say the least. Brandon, I'm not sure if you're as into the autograph collecting and memorabilia scene as I am, but I mentioned about AI being used to authenticate autographs, or AI in general, producing an autograph. Do you think that AI can be as accurate or more accurate than a human being who's looking at, for example, Johnny Bench, who has as a Reds fan, and Calvin, you probably have seen Johnny Bench's autograph. It's very distinctive and probably pretty easy to tell if it's, well, not necessarily if it's real or not, but at least tell you if it's possibly real. Both of you guys, you think that AI, an autograph like that, really can do as good or better job than a human being looking at and determining if the autograph is real? Handwriting analysis in general is used in crime solving and many things. What do you think about that aspect
of
AI?
I mean, they had a really hard time making fingers, I'll just say that.
Yes.
Let's put it this way. AI makes mistakes, you know, so to think that it could just perfectly crafted, I don't know. I think it's a long shot.
So there is a way to go before it becomes as good as a human. It may never be as good, but it can do a few things. And certainly we're impressed by the ability to talk for 10 seconds and voila, you get this jingle for your radio show or this new song, and it sounds just as real as anything that a band might make if they practice for a week. Something else we see a lot on social media, we see these memes where Donald Trump is dancing with Putin, or you know, maybe that that AOC is back to bartending again. I mean, this controversial, humorous things that you know are AI-generated, but they look real. Any thoughts about that?
Sir,
I mean,
yes, sir,
I mean, if you've had a couple drinks, Calvin, maybe if you thought that if you see a meme, for example, with Putin and Trump dancing or kissing or whatever, that it's actually real. To me, it looks almost better than reality, and it is funny. We want to amuse. Laughter is the best medicine. But any thoughts on that? Did you ever have to think twice as to whether or not this AI created meme, this animation, was real or not?
I think most people would know better the moment they saw it, but my Facebook feed lately has been overrun by these AI videos, which are, honestly, I can't get enough of them. They are hilarious. Like the one of Michael Jackson getting pulled over and then going hee-hee and then speeding off in his car. The one of the Queen doing a backflip over her desk. I mean, some of these are just so unhinged, and it's hilarious.
So. And I will say, I definitely get blown away sometimes. They are that good. So I got to, following what I said, I do have to kick in and say that.
Yeah, so if nothing else, they're good for a laugh. And laughter, especially in the tense world we live in, is the best medicine. But you just think about it for a second. You can probably tell if something is real or not. But nothing wrong with giggling. It's definitely a way to ease some of the tension in our world. I just don't want to get carried away with it. Don't want AI to overrun your life. And that's pretty much the big thing. So, Brandon, are you currently working in the IT field? Is this more of a hobby? I'm not even quite sure I know what you do for a living. Are you looking at maybe being AI programmer or advisor with your own business at some point? What are some of your thoughts on that?
See, I'm doing a little bit of web development right now. I'm for one of my buddies. Yeah, I'm mainly a repair guy. That's what I've been for the last few years, and I work for a dispensary up here in Maine. And,
the good old dispensaries. Isn't that a hot business?
Can I say the name?
Let's say potentially, as I say. I've said that joke too many times. It's getting old. Yes, we'd like to hear of the name. What do you think? What do you think, Calvin? Is that a good joke?
Yeah, it's got a great name. It's called Marijuanaville.
Oh, well, that's that's pretty direct. Not to be confused with Margaritaville.
Yeah. To the point, you know what we sell, right?
Good joint or good point? I guess both, right?
Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, absolutely.
That's enough. Enough puns for now from the king of puns.
No, I've done repair work for this guy for quite a while, 10 years or so, and he's now. I'm not really doing much of that anymore. I've been on a learning mission, and at the same time, I'm working on working on his new website stuff. You know, stay watching over that. I don't really necessarily. I'm not looking for a career in being an IT guy. I want to build something of my own. Put some infrastructure together. I don't even know what, but I'm sure Calvin's involved in it in some way, for sure.
So it's a hobby at this point.
Oh, yeah, give it time.
Yeah, but it's something I think we should all know about, just like some of my hobbies, geography, for example, people's accents. Not sure how useful that might be in putting bread on the table, but it does help you learn about the world, and it's fascinating, and it enriches you. The brain is just like any other body part. If you don't exercise it, it will atrophy. Especially when you get older, like myself. So
yeah.
I think of that as a good point. Wanted to go into a similar topic with you gentlemen. I've befriended a person who has a self-driving Tesla, and I talked to Scott about that.
Boy.
And I've been in the car. In fact, on the day of taping this program, we are planning on socializing and driving a few miles in the self-driving aforementioned vehicle. Have either of you gentlemen ever been in, as a driver or passenger, a self-driving car, a Tesla or one of the other cars that might be self-driving?
Actually, yes. When I was still at the paper mill and I was a union steward, we had a tr- training conference last year out in Vegas, well, Reno to be more specific, but we had to take Ubers around town a couple different times, and one of them was in a self-driving Tesla, which was pretty mind-blowing at the time, but I imagine that technology we're going to slowly start seeing become more commonplace.
Yeah, it's different, and one interesting thing about the Midwest with the potholes and the speed bumps, the Tesla isn't really too good at knowing where a speed bump or pothole might be, which kind of concerns me, is that you can have sensors anywhere. So they obviously are improving the software almost every day, and the car updates itself just like Windows does. So I think that will improve. But it knows how to avoid parked cars, how to avoid a deer running across the road, another problem here in the Midwest, and follows the speed limits, gives you an outline of the road ahead. It's fascinating, and honestly, in some ways, it does better than a human, but they still advise you don't fall asleep at the wheel. Keep an eye on the road at all times and take over when necessary. One thing it also does, at least this Tesla that I was in, it has a little sensor which makes sure that your eyes are following the road. And if they don't, it beeps or it slaps you or whatever it does. So it's nothing is totally self-driving. Although if you are like parked, like on the road, parallel parked, and you're like a block away at a restaurant, you can actually have the car come and get you. So it would literally be driverless, and it would pick you up just like a valet, which is quite fascinating, if not a bit scary. Who needs you driving along here, and you see a car without a driver, and you're kind of wondering, is this a very light-skinned person? Am I totally crazy, or is it actually driving on its own? So some of this, it gets a little carried away, and I'm not sure if it's scary or convenient or just something to be totally fascinated by. But we may see more of these self-driving cars in the future. Tesla, in general, there's no engine, has electric mode. It doesn't make a lot of noise. The ride is very smooth and has pretty good pickup, and it's very comfortable. So quite different than driving along at a 1975 Chevrolet Nova, for example, an old-school type of gas vehicle. This car is about as high-tech as you can get, and we'll see exactly how many more of these we find on the road, and are people going to take kindly to self-driving cars, to electric cars, or will we ever lose our American love of the old-fashioned gasoline cars with the roaring engine, the muffler, etc.? You know, guys, I'm still getting used to driving automatic transmission. I pretty much had to switch to it a few years ago when I bought the car I had before, the one I had now. Really, I still prefer stick shift, but obviously with a self-driving car, a Tesla, if you want a six-speed, you want a six speeds on the floor, four on the floor, three on the tree, it ain't going to happen. So you have to allow the technology to take over when necessary, but one can still miss the stick shift. And it'd be interesting to see if stick shift becomes completely deprecated, as there are people that are steadfast in wanting to drive that way. I was, but I pretty much had no choice when I got a new car a few years ago. So I just deal with it, but I do miss my six-speed gear shift on the floor. I'm not gonna deny that. You know, one thing that comes up, Brandon, you know, the movie Jurassic Park, where they were just fooling around and they recreated dinosaurs, and the dinosaurs ended up being very detrimental to humans. Of course, it was a movie, but I think Calvin and I have brought this up before. Is this a possibility? Could AI end up, you kind of were talking about that a little bit earlier, can AI become invasive? Can it end up almost attacking the human species, almost like we saw almost by accident in Jurassic Park? Should we learn how to control AI so that it does act to our advantage but doesn't try to overtake the entire world? Is that going to be a problem, you think, a few years down the road?
You know, we've already had issues. Like, these models show, like, malware-like behavior sometimes. Claude was guilty of it, showing persistence. I can't go into the specifics because I don't exactly know them, but I know it was showing, like, persistence, leaving notes for itself when they were updating the model and stuff like that. So that's, you know, concerning. And there is legitimate concerns, but I think a great comparison movie would be Terminator. You know, as far as machines going out of control. That's probably a good comparison right there.
Would you say that Jurassic Park really was a farce, or is that something? Is it, you know, it's come up before? Is it really possible, or are we just going a bit too over the edge by thinking that this is beyond anything that could ever be done in a lab?
You know, that's hard to answer. You know, I don't see it ever going there, but who really knows, right? I mean, I ain't gonna jump to conclusions. I mean, just say, hey, we're safe from that, because I don't actually know that. You know, like I said, the comment about the persistence there, and, you know, like, who knows what they could be. There could be triggers, it could be collecting data on everybody, and we don't even know it. Like, I mean, I don't want to put my tinfoil hat here on, but...
Yeah, it can be a bit spine-tingling, but we have to let people know AI can be very valuable, as can many things that are done in the lab. These fancy-dancy inventions, these self-driving vehicles, but understand the limitations. And I think we can all agree there is no more powerful tool than the human brain. Dolphins are smart, chimps are smart, dogs are smart, but the human brain can do things that no other species or no other piece of machinery really, really can do. So I've kind of hogged the conversation here, Calvin. Anything you wanted to add to our little scintillating discussion of technology and AI and computers doing things more powerful than a lot of people can?
Yes, actually. So I don't think we covered this yet on the show, and Brandon, I don't even think we've covered this talking amongst ourselves, just because I've been working so much and haven't really had much time to address anything, but obviously back when we first met, it was over the topic of CB radio. I think specifically we met over the discussion of an amplifier that you had built. So I was actually under the impression that you were a radio repairman and you had a shop when we first met. So out of all the different things that you can kind of switch up and get into, how did you go from primarily working on radios to getting into AI and all this computer stuff? Like, what initially sparked that interest for you?
You know, it's funny you asked that, because I was still kind of detoxing away from the bad stuff, and I was just kind of around my mom's house doing nothing, you know, no real direction or anything. And you sent me that little Nuke 5 there, that little computer, and I just kind of started playing with that and downloaded the IDE and stuff. This is only, I think, maybe a year and a half ago. Ever since then, I liked computers and stuff, but I had never played with Python and none of that. So just in a year and a half, like, I've gained quite a bit of knowledge on that. And we did, it started out with the radio stuff. I loved building amplifiers. I thought that was great. Solid state, really, the only thing I ever played with. Not much of a radio repairman. I mean, I can do stuff to them, but I don't like it as much as I like playing with amplifiers. I can problem solve those real quick. But you know, I had gotten away from it because I got so heavy into the computers and, you know, other things before that. I'll probably dabble back into it. I was just talking about putting my antenna back up the other day there. Maybe we'll talk some skip there sometime.
Yep.
Adam here on The Talking Place. WGH Talk Radio, broadcasting out of the universe's strongest town, Marion, OH, broadcasting via our website, WWGH1071.com, with my regular guest, mate of the microphone, brother in broadcasting, Calvin Williams from Idaho, and our new guest, hopefully this will not be the only time, as he's been quite fascinating so far, Mr. Brandon Parker from the great state of Maine. Calvin, you had a couple points to add, so the floor is yours.
Yes, so Brandon, I always joke that I'm the jack of all trades, master of none, and on a long enough timeline, I can work on just about anything if you give me enough time to sit around and screw with it. Like, all my small engine builds and stuff I've done in the past, I've pretty much pulled off without any kind of reference literature. I might Google a couple torque specs here and there just to make sure I'm not going to blow it up when I go to start it for the first time. But would you say that your mind works in the same fashion that mine does, where you kind of look at things and learn hands-on, and if, like, I could hand you anything and given enough time, you would figure it out on your own?
Yeah, you know, to a degree. It depends what it is, but yeah, generally mechanically, electronics, stuff like that. And then I can't say it enough how important it is to use reference, right? Like, who was it? Einstein said that too. You know, it's a waste of energy, and we all know how precious energy is. It's a waste of energy to bother remembering something you can simply reference, you know. And AI is the ultimate reference. So just adding that in there, though, there's no shame in looking stuff up. But yeah, absolutely. I try to do it like that. And if I can do it, then there's no sense in referencing it. But yeah, no, yeah, I think about the same.
So do you ever have the fear of the possibility of AI feeding you misinformation, or do you find most of what you get from it to be fairly trustworthy?
That's the thing. I already see that. For instance, it depends what you're talking about. You know, if you're talking political stuff, or, you know, for instance, go ask Grok about some gender stuff. That will sum up that whole thing right there, because OpenAI used to be somewhat, you know, I mean, they're and pretty well are somewhat, you know, scientific about it, where, like, they don't get into the nonsense. Grok will feed right into it, slay sister, all kinds of weird stuff like that. So, yeah, it's pretty wild. You can get it. It depends on who owns the model, you know, what service it is. But yes, you can absolutely get misinformation from AI, no question about it.
I guess that's the risk we take with AI. Is it always accurate?
Yeah, that's the reality of it. You know, that's the thing, is that you can. I didn't mean to cut you off there, but you can use AI on your own, right? And that's, like, a lot of people taking and doing, you know, machine learning, whatever. They bring you know, models locally and train them themselves because of things like that. So that's one thing to take into consideration, is where are you getting your AI from? So that's what I would say about
it. It seems like a high-tech take on the fake news concept. Yeah. Is AI sometimes fake? Again, the autograph authentication being an example. How does it know? Someone who has seen Johnny Bench's autograph, met Johnny Bench and seen him sign, the way that the pen flows. You have limited ability to do that with a computer. And that person can provide the most accurate determination as to whether or not this particular autograph is accurate. As it's more than just how it looks. It's the way the pen flows, the ink, the different levels of ink based on how fast the person signs. There are many factors, and these autograph authenticators, just like people who authenticate an antique or any collectible, they have years of experience, formal education, their own instinct. And can you do that with a computer? Well, it's debatable. There are people who think AI can do anything, and theoretically it probably can, but you also have to look at the limitations, plus the personal aspect. Do you really want a computer doing something which you would only think is valid if it's done by a human? It's points to ponder for sure.
Yeah.
So that actually reminds me of a story I saw recently. There was a blind author who was writing one of her novels, and her pen had run out of paper, but because she's blind, she didn't realize it until it was way too late. But a forensics team was able to trace out the indentation in the paper where she had been pressing the pen against it to find all the missing words. Do you think, on a long enough timeline, that could be a job that could be done and done accurately by AI, or would you still put more trust into a team of forensic investigators to handle a task like that?
So But here's the thing that's important, right? So when I was talking about the signature thing, right, I was talking about it, I at that point was talking about it producing a signature, right? As far as recognizing, that's actually different, because that's AI's strong point is pattern recognition, because that's what it works with, right? So that's how it works. So I you know, as far as it recognizing things, you'd be surprised how good it is. That being said, as much as it's already used for things like facial recognition, there's actually quite a few cases going around. Again, I'm on the side of AI, but we have to use it responsibly. There's cases out there of people being falsely identified by AI, you know, just to, as an example. But yeah, it does do very well with like pattern recognition and matching things together and stuff. But I just wanted to add that.
So bottom line, listeners, AI is incredible. It's amazing, and you have to pinch yourself sometimes, but understand there are limitations. The human brain has limitations, and how can we have a marriage of the power of the human being and a computer? I guess as AI evolves and becomes more commonplace, we'll find out. So, as my mama always said, time flies when you're having fun. It's been my pleasure to welcome Brandon Parker from Maine to my program, the Adam the Computer Guy Radio Extravaganza of Fabulousness, mid-morning, afternoon, coffee, tea, or me break, and my usual mate of the microphone, Mr. Calvin Williams. Before we say adios, auf Wiedersehen, and das Vidanius, and arrivederci, do you gentlemen have any parting words? Let's start with Brandon.
You know, geez, hey, it was a pleasure being on. You know, honestly, I just wanted to show proof while I was here. It's never too late to start learning. You know, if you got curiosity and some discipline, you know, you can turn your life around. You know, this stuff did it for me. It can do it for anybody. Yeah, just thanks for having me on.
Sounds good. And from you, Calvin, any parting words from the great state of Idaho?
I would just like to say thank you, Brandon, for coming on with us, and I look forward to doing another show to follow up this one, because I definitely feel, especially on this topic, we barely scratched the surface.
Well, always keep them hungry for more, as we say. Adam here on The Talking Place. Feel free to email Calvin at calvin@wwgh1071.com, or email me if you wish. I don't care if you want to email me to complain about the program. Compliments are fine. Complaints, questions, comments, or just to say, hi, Adam, how are you doing? Merry Christmas! The email would be adam@wwgh1071.com.